This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. You know, we live in a world full of dangerous situations, and thankfully, we have the police to jump in. However, there was a time when the police didn't even know what to do. So joining me to explain how police tactics evolved is author Chris Bird. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
You're welcome.
What prompted you to write these books?
Well, I started off, again, it was my wife's suggestion. I tried to write a little bit of fiction without much success. And so Anita says, well, why don't you write something that you know about? And that resulted in a book called The Concealed Handgun Manual. And that's now in its sixth edition. I tried to start off each chapter with a story, an actual incident that had happened that related to the content of the chapter. And the feedback I got was, we really like those actual incidents. So I put together a bunch of those, and that was a second book called Thank God I Had a Gun, True Accounts of Self-Defense. And in the sixth edition of the Concealed Handgun Manual, the first chapter was about mass shootings, and I thought subsequently that it was worth a whole book on its own, because we seem to be having more and more of these mass shootings, whether it's disenchanted citizens or whether it's terrorists, but they still present the same sort of problems, where somebody goes in and tries to kill as many people as possible in a shorter time as possible before the police arrive.
Now, with your book, Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage, When Seconds Count, Police Are Still Minutes Away, one of the first chapters, it's about the Texas Tower shootings. How did that particular event change law enforcement's addressing these types of situations?
Well, that was 51 years ago now, come August, and things were a lot different then. There had been no similar sort of shootings, and I guess police departments realized that they needed to have something that could cope with these sort of mass shootings. So they invented SWAT teams, and that was a large part of the creation of SWAT teams was as a result of the shooting in the tower and at the University of Austin, at the University of Texas in Austin, I should say. And so that started the thing off. Then we had Columbine some years later, when we discovered that SWAT teams were not the answer because they took too long. It was 45 minutes after the first 911 call that an ad hoc SWAT team actually went in, and by that time, all the victims who were killed were pretty much killed in the first 10 minutes.
I remember that, Columbine, and I didn't realize, you know, after reading some of your book, that it was 45 minutes. Why did it take so long for police to get there?
Well, it wasn't that it took the police that long to get there, because there was at least one officer, a school resource officer, and a deputy sheriff who was at the scene. And but the system then was, set up a perimeter and don't go in, and wait for the SWAT team. Well, it takes a while for a SWAT team to get organized, and this was in a county jurisdiction. Jefferson County Sheriff's Office was the main respondent, and when they put together a SWAT team, it included officers from Denver PD and various other organizations. And as a result of that, the training then became, the first four officers would go in. And that's essentially what happened at San Bernardino. And again, it's too late. when San Bernardino happened, there was a lieutenant who was going to lunch, and he decided that he was first on the scene. He decided he would wait for three other officers until he had an entry team. Now, I'm assuming that that is the protocol for the San Bernardino Police Department. And so he was just, I'm not blaming him in any way, but the shooting was still going on when he arrived. And by the time the officers arrived, it took 2 minutes. And according to a friend of mine who keeps a database of about 200, his name is Ron Borsch, and he's in Ohio. He has a database of about 200 of these shootings, and he says that the average active shooter is going to kill or wound between 4 and 5 people a minute. So with two shooters, as in San Bernardino, you could lose 20 people in that 2 minutes. So now what they're doing, a lot of police departments, I talked to in particular the Oklahoma County sheriff, who is responsible for, that includes Oklahoma City. And he said, our system now is first officer on the scene goes in immediately. But what has happened is, I was at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in September last year, and we were addressed by a sheriff from Brevard County in Florida. And he says, when they get an active shooter call, we're going to respond at Mach 2 with our hair on fire. His words, not mine. And but we're going to arrive too late. You are there on the scene, and therefore the best thing I can do for my residents is to teach them how to defend themselves until we can get there. And he put together a program, an 8-hour program, which resulted in a concealed handgun license for his residents. And he told us that it was booked up for a year at that time. So there is interest from the public in knowing how to deal with this sort of thing. And there's also a bunch of sheriffs in particular who are advocating get yourself a concealed handgun license, take training, be prepared. But I think you're in Chicago, right?
Yes.
And that's maybe a little bit more difficult. But one thing everybody can do is to, it's called situational awareness. What really gets to me is watching people walk down the street and their faces are in their cell phones. They're talking, they're texting, they're paying absolutely no attention to what's going on around them. And so they're a potential victim. These streetwise people who want to rob you or even rape you, for that matter, they want somebody who is an easy target. And somebody who isn't paying attention is right on the top of that list. So I would advise everybody, whatever age, that they should, when they're out in public, they should be aware of what's going on, keep their eyes open, and if something doesn't look right, get out of there.
You know, personally for me, I know I'm a bit of a coward, so I do tend to not walk around with my face in my phone, and I do look at people, but I know that if a situation happened and there was like some guy shooting somebody, I think I would freeze. I don't think I wouldn't be able to run. I don't think I would be able to hide. And I definitely feel like I would just be in the way. And I think a lot of people feel like that. So what could you do as like an individual to sit there and kind of train yourself not to be afraid?
Well, one of the things is to not be surprised if and that's feeds into this situational awareness thing. If a criminal looking for a target sees somebody who obviously isn't paying attention, isn't aware of what's going on, they can be surprised and overcome before they even know what's happening. So the other thing is knowledge, and hopefully this is what I'm trying to do with my book, is around the word of what you can do, so that when it happens, if it happens, and let's face it, it's a remote possibility, the chances of you or I actually being involved in a mass shooting incident is pretty low, but it can happen. And if you thought these things through, what am I going to do? That what is being taught now, even by the federal government, is run, hide, fight. And run, for most people, is by far the best thing to do. Get out of there, evacuate. Go somewhere else, and if you can take people with you, that's fine. But don't delay. Don't try and collect your belongings, but just get out of there. I took a course which I call the Unarmed Response. It's an ALICE course. ALICE stands for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Evacuate, not necessarily in that order. And the guy who was teaching us as instructors said that when his son was six, he took him into the principal's office and he said, I have given my son permission to do whatever he has to do if he hears shooting to get out of there, to evacuate. And the principal says, you can't do that. I guess all their lives, administrators of schools and teachers are taught, you are responsible for every kid from the time he gets on the bus in the morning to the time she gets off the bus in the afternoon. And so you need to keep tabs on them. And the instructor said, I can replace your broken window, but I cannot replace my child. And you find a lot of police officers, particularly, are giving their children those sort of instructions, training, whatever. But by far the best thing is to get out of there. If you have to fight, there are ways. Throw things at the bad guy, swarm the bad guy. The chances of that having to happen are pretty low. But if you know what's likely to happen, what the guy is trying to do, you can't talk them out of it. In a lot of cases, they will commit suicide at the end of their run. They're looking for as many minutes as they can get shooting unarmed people before law enforcement arrives. And we even had acknowledgement of that from Kathy Lanier when she was chief of police in Washington, D.C. She was interviewed on 60 Minutes, and she said, we have never told citizens to take action. We've told them call 911, be a good witness, et cetera, et cetera. But we've never taught them to fight back. And now we're doing that, and it's a totally different scenario. And so the day after that appeared on Fox News, there was a piece which said that I think the previous year, she had turned down 80% of the requests for concealed carry licenses in Washington, D.C., and she is the final arbiter of that. She gets to say who carries and who can't. So although she was advocating last resort fight, she was taking away the best instrument for doing that. And so, well, the way I put it is her hypocritical slip was showing.
In the book, you talked about the Thurston, I think I said that right, the high school shooting in Oregon. And in particular, this one kid, Jake Riker, he tackled the shooter. In this particular case, when he tackled the student, a bunch of other students jumped up and they helped him as well. But what happens if he was the only one that jumped in? I mean, would that be smart to do if you're the only one that's going to do something?
Well, usually what happens is if one person takes the lead, others will follow. And certainly that happened with Jake Riker in Springfield, Oregon, the case that you mentioned. And he pretty much knocked the guy down, knocked his rifle away. The guy was then able to pull a Glock, which he had in his waistband, and Jake was still tackling him when his brother and various other people also, assisted him in overcoming this this shooter. But Jake was it was his 17th birthday. And he was a school wrestler, and he was over 6 feet. So he may well have been able to overcome that guy on his own. But it depends on the situation. One thing about this, whether you decide to run or fight, or hide for that matter, it's a very personal decision, and it depends on what you know, your level of training, what sort of weapons you have to hand. In the worst possible instance, again, part of that ALICE training program, we had a guy with a plastic gun come in as the bad guy to start shooting people, and he had two guys who were throwing soft rubber balls at him, and at his head, at his face, and it was interesting to see his reaction. His hands went up with one with the gun in it to protect his face. The gun was pointed at the ceiling. He wasn't shooting anybody, so that would certainly put him off his stroke. Any possibility of fighting back is something that that they don't want to deal with.
Now, the hide portion is what kind of gets me, because I remember the shooting at the gay club in Florida where people hid in the bathrooms and it still didn't help. In essence, where do you hide when this stuff happens?
Well, you want to hide in somewhere where you've got an exit. The real problem with that, as was pointed out by Sheriff Wayne Ivey, is that the only way in or out of the bathroom is through one door. And the guy went in there and started shooting people. So that's why I say that that run is preferable to hide. But there are instances where, for example, at Sandy Hook, I think there was a room, a classroom, that they'd had some sort of a training test a week or so before, and the glass window in the door had been covered up with cardboard, so the guy couldn't see in. And if you lock that door, you put your cell phones on silent and you keep quiet, then the chances are that you may well be bypassed. There are absolutely no guarantees as to what's going to happen, but that is an option. Unfortunately, most classrooms have only one entrance and exit, but which makes it more difficult. If a bad guy is coming in one door, then maybe if there was a second door, people can get out of the second door. And I've seen that happen, too, in a training exercise. But there is no no single answer, but if you know what can happen, it means that you're not going to panic in quite the same way that you would if all of this is a surprise. Because one of the things in all the accounts that I've read are stories of people panicking, running. Now, running is fine. Running away is an excellent idea, and it certainly doesn't reflect on your courage, because that in most cases is the best thing to do. But if you have a gun, or you're in a position where you can't run, that you have to face the shooter, then fight with everything you've got and never give up just because you get hit. You've got to keep fighting.
For the people listening, where can they find your books?
You can get it on Amazon, and I have a toll-free number if you want an autographed edition, either for a gift for somebody or you want it yourself. It's 888-700-4333.
Well, thanks for coming on, Chris. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Mason.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.